This Shabbos marks the 30th yahrzeit of Rav Ruderman. Marina Rabbeinu Rav Yaakov Yitzchak Halevi Ruderman. And even though halachically, or even hashkafically, there's nothing unique about a 30th yahrzeit, nothing special about it, but in this, the world looks at 30 as some kind of a milestone. And so, as a milestone, it's a time when we have a special, a zikaron, a memory. We do something in memory of the person over 30 years. So that's why I think tonight it's appropriate, while heading up to his 30th yahrzeit, we take a few minutes out and remember who Rav Ruderman was. There was a person named Rav Moshe Brown. Maybe you know the name. He is a Rosh Yeshiva in Far Rockaway. And he was, in my time, a Talmud in Yeshiva, one in the Kollel. And I remember what he said at his Siyum HaShas. He made a Siyum HaShas while he was in Kollel in Ner Yisrael. And he said in a very powerful thing that had an effect on me when he said it. He quoted a Kuzari. Kuzari says, Einu Doime, Mi Shiroa Navi, L'mi Shalai Roa Navi. The persona of a person, someone who is zeicha to see a Navi, is not the same as someone who never saw a Navi. The fact that you were in the presence and had the merit of being able to see what kind of a person a Navi is changes your whole persona for the rest of your life. You saw a certain level of being, of Kedusha, that changes a whole person. So Rav Moshe Brown added something to that. He said, the same way Einu Doime someone who saw the Gedolim of Europe, who saw the Chafetz Chaim and Reb Chaim Eiser and the Altiv Slobotka, as someone who never saw those people. And he was referring to Rav Ruderman. He was referring to the Reshiva. The Reshiva who was Zeicha to learn by these Gedolim, he was a different person. So I'm going to take it now one step further. My generation represents the last generation that saw the Gedolim from Europe, the people that were zeicha to see these Gedolim, and these giants that came out of Europe, the European Gedolim. My generation is the last generation that learned from them, that had shek kesher with them, that knew them. There was a triumvirate of Gedolei Olam in the yeshiva world in my day. It was Rav Moshe Feinstein, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, and Rav Ruderman. And they're all nifter within 18 months of each other. Rabbi Yankov was nifter first. 2 weeks later, Rav Moshe was nifter. And then Shechtel Neuberger, who today is the menahel of Yeshivas Ner Yisrael, walked into Rav Ruderman and said to him the pasuk that it says by Yaakov Avinu when he was left alone on the other side of the river. It says, Vayivasu Yaakov Levado, he said, Rav Shechtel to Rav Ruderman. He said, you're the last. When Ruderman passed away, it was the end. It was the end of a tkufa, an end of a whole period of time of the giants of the Gedolim of Europe. So, for those of us who were zeiche to see those Gedolim, so this little comments I'm going to make is like a little bit of a trip down memory lane. And for the rest of you who may or may not have met them, so you may think I'm describing a superhero, a superhuman creature. But it wasn't that way. He wasn't superhuman, and he wasn't mythical, and he wasn't legendary. He was real, because we met him, we knew him. So let's start. Let's tell you a little bit about who Rav Ruderman was, and then let's see what if there's any ramifications for us ourselves. Rav Ruderman was born in a town called Dalhinov in either 1900, 1901. He himself wasn't exactly sure what year he was born. He came to Yeshiva Slobotka at the age of about 13 and a half, just after his bar mitzvah, a little after his bar mitzvah. The Altar of Slobotka realized right away what kind of a phenom he had on his hands. And he put him on a seder of learning of a mesechta a week. A mesechta a week. I see it in your eyes. You can't believe that, can you? At the end of the week, he was required to go to Moshe Mordechayevsky in the Rosh Yeshiva of Slobodka for Bechina. By the age of 16, he finished all of Shas. He knew Shas. And his Seder was split. In the morning, he learned Iyun. In the afternoon, he had a Bekiya Seder of 50 blot a day. When I said to him, 50 blot a day? How can someone learn 50 blot a day? Meh, it's no big deal. He said, Rabbi Akiva Eiger had a Seder of 100 blot a day. And he said, the Gilyon HaShas, that we have the notes on the side, he said, it came from that Seder of 100 blot a day. So he was learning 50 blot a day in Yeshiva Slabodka. He told me once, Emol Gokuktaf and blot. I looked at a page one time in my life, and I remembered it for the rest of my life. He was the Ilui Shebiluyim. He once said to me an interesting idea. He says, you think the yeshivas in Europe were different than the yeshivas in America? Bachram were different? Nah. Bachram, the same Bachram that were in Lithuania, the Bachram that were near Yisrael, the same kind of Bachram. There was one difference. In Europe, there were Iluyim. In America, we didn't see Iluyim anymore. Didn't see the same kind of Ilui. That Iluyis is almost superhuman. Was something that was unique and special to the Gdelim of Europe. And without a doubt, that's what we saw by the Rosh Yeshiva. It's interesting. When the Alter saw that he had this phenom on his hands, this genius that knew everything the way he knew it, in the middle of his Seder, his Masechta week, so to speak, a letter came to the Alter of Slobodka informing him that the Reshiva's father was Nifter. You know what they ought to do with the letter? He shelved it. He didn't tell him. He waited until after he'd finished Shas, a year and a half later, that he called him into his office. And he told him the following. He said that Reb Chaim Volozhiner, the Talmud of the Vilna Gaon, had once had a Talmud named Rabbi Yossel Slutsker. Rabbi Yossel Slutsker's father was Nifter. And Rav Chaim Volozhiner didn't tell him about it. And he said, look, I said in Yiddish, look how strong the Yetzirah is that it can even kill a person in order to keep somebody from learning. After the Alter told him that story, he said, Bachel, I have a little Kiddush to tell you. Your father passed away a year and a half ago. So Rudiman heard that his father passed away. He told me he sat Shiva, the halachas of Shmur Chayik, he sat for a couple of hours, and that was it. Rabbi, I told you a story, but just think about what I just said. You're 13 and a half, 14 years old. You've had no kesher with your parents. No letters have come for a year and a half. You don't question. You don't ask. You just sat in Shiva and learned. It's unbelievable. We can't even imagine not having kesher with our parents, I think, in today's day, for a day or 2 days or 3 days, a week. It's inconceivable. And when I asked him, I remember asking him, were you angry at the Alter for not telling you? Were you upset? He said, no. The Alter knew what he was doing. If the Alter of Slobodka held that it was the right thing to do, that I should not know that my father passed away, because it was learning, it was the right thing to do, and he had no sveikas and had no tainas, had no questions that it was the right, the accurate, and the Alter did the right thing. So, this is describing an Iluyas, describing a love of Messiah of Torah that's unusual. We can't find this kind of Iluyas today. The ability, it's long gone. But there was something else that they had in Europe that was unique. Reb Chaim Pinchas Scheinberg once said that there was a purity. The air had a purity in it in Europe. What he meant was, I think this. This is a teich now, a speculation. But I think what it means to me is this. That it was pure Kedusha, pure Torah. There was nothing else on their minds. There was nothing else. There was no news, and there was no politics, and there was no nothing. All they had, really, was just Torah, Torah, and Torah. And that's all they did. And it led to some remarkable, remarkable things. The Reshiva's avos Torah was unbelievable. How much he loved Torah. as I told you before, he knew Shas Baal Peh. His mind must have been a scanner. He said he looked one time at a daf and he remembered it for the rest of his life. In fact, I was once in the hospital with him and the Rebbetzin. The Rebbetzin was sitting, they were just sitting quietly, not saying anything. Then suddenly the Rebbetzin looked up at me and she says to me, "Mein Mann, my husband, you take a pin and put it through the Gemara and it'll tell you every letter that was on the Gemara under that page." And I looked at the Rosh Yeshiva. And he gave me a smile and said, "Amol, once upon a time I could do it." Yeah, he didn't deny it. Once upon a time, he was older then. He said, "I could do it." But take this. Take this kind of avasat there. When Rosh Yeshiva was in Slobodka, he told me this, the following story. Listen to this. He said in World War I, that gives us a date a little bit. If he was born 1900, 1901, so he may have been 13 to 14 years old, maybe 15 years old. The Or Sameach Anoshim was published. And by the way, I have to tell you, when he told me this story, I went and asked him a kasha about something. And I may have even mentioned the Or Sameach. I don't remember. To this day, unfortunately, it's lost to history. I don't remember what the kasha was, where the Or Sameach was talking. But he asked me to bring him an Or Sameach. I brought him an Or Sameach. And I found the appropriate shtickle. And we looked. And he's looking on the page. His eyesight was very bad at this point. It was hard for him to see. And he pointed to me on the page. He said, "Look here, look here. What does it say here?" And I read what it said. He said, yeah, that's it, that's it, that's it. He says to me, "You know when was the last time I saw this Or Sameach?" And then he told me the story I'm about to tell you. In World War I, the Or Sameach, while they were, the Yeshiva of Slobodka, left, had to leave Slobodka because of bombings during the war. And not only were they forced out of Slobodka, they were forced to be under curfew at night. Why? Because bomb strafings, you know, you see the lights downstairs on the floor, that's where you know there are people living there, you want to bomb that. So there was curfew, blackness, you couldn't have light. The Or Sameach was a brand new sefer. No one had any money. There was one Or Sameach Anoshim for the entire Yeshiva Slobodka. And the way it worked was, each bachur got one night to get to have, one night, one day, overnight, that he would have, be able to use the Or Sameach Anoshim, the brand new Or Sameach Anoshim. When it was Rav Ruderman's turn, there was curfew, and it was pitch black. There was no light. So he told me that he stayed up all night by moonlight and learned the entire Or Sameach Anoshim in one night by moonlight. So he says to me, "You want to know what that was the last time I saw this piece in the Or Sameach?" So 70 years later, he still remembered it. That's the Avasat. When he told me this story, I couldn't believe it. First of all, the Avasat Taira, you know, you get a Pesefer, how many of us run to want to see it, and he felt it was such a chiddush, such a schus, that he learned the entire Sefer in his one night. That's the only time he had it. He learned it in one night. And I saw this years later by him. I remember we were in Camp Aguda. And a man used to come up from Lakewood with a truck. And he would unload Sfarim and put them on tables and sell them in Parnassa. The Shiva loved Sfarim. He had a huge library of Sfarim. He had a room this size of wall-to-wall Sfarim, a collection, at least one room. He had another, like two apartments, another apartment. It was amazing. His ideas and his memory was incredible. And he said, "Oh, what's going on?" I told him, "There's a man son." He says, "Let's go see." So he went table by table. I walked with him. He picked up every single sefer, looked at it, and, you know, turned the pages, wanted to see what it was, put it back down, one by one. We went through every single sefer on every table, walking by a line, back and forth, back and forth. When we finished, he picked out three Sfarim. He wrote a check. He pulled out a check. I think he went like this. He had no money. He didn't write the check. I wrote the check for him. And later, $5 for three Sfarim. That's what it was in those days. Later, a day later, he wrote me a check for $5. I, like a turkey, I cashed the check. And to this day, the guy said, "Why'd you save the check?" With his handwriting, his signature, everything was on it. But I did cash the check. But that's not the story. We got back to the room, And he's holding the three svarim. I said, well, what'd you have these svarim? What did you buy these svarim for? So he says to me, no, I wanted to give him parnasa. Yungaman Suleiman, I wanted to give him parnasa. He says, there were three svarim. One was the Asifas Kenim on Kodshim. Very standard sefer. He says to me, this is for you. There was another person taking care. He think it was a Tzais or an Avni Miluim. It was an Avni Miluim. He said, this is for you. The third sefer was Mishnas Rabbi Aaron on Musar. It was brand new, just come out. He said, this is for me. He went to sleep at night. And he made sure he was in bed, went to sleep, an older man. Took off his glasses, put them on a table, turned out the light. Around 3:30 in the morning, 4 o'clock, we checked in just to make sure everything was okay. We discover he's sitting, he found a little lamp, and he turned on the light. We don't know how he found his glasses. We don't know how he found them. He had his glasses on. And he's sitting like this and we were shocked. He said, how could I go to sleep and not see what Rabbi Aaron and Musar had to say about Musar? How could I go to sleep? He's in 83, 84 years old. He couldn't go to sleep without seeing the new missions, what Rabbi Aaron Cutler had to say about Musar. That was a limud for us, for all of us, for our lives. His lips were always moving. The Avos HaTorah, he knew Shas Bal Peh, he was always chazering. He was always chazering. He never a moment when he was like kedog shein b'mayim. Chazal say a talmid chacham. He had kedog shein b'mayim. He can't live without water. His lips were always moving. In fact, when he went to sleep, in bed asleep, his lips were moving. There was a story. I didn't see this, but I know the person who did described that he was in the middle of a sleep. He woke up, got up, went into his library, took a sefer off the shelf, looked inside, closed it, put it back on the shelf, and then went back to sleep. His mind was always intact. He couldn't pull himself away from it. His coveted Torah. I've described to you now his opposite Torah. Let's go on to coveted Torah. This story I heard from his daughter, Mrs. Weinberg. She told me this story while Rav Ruderman was standing there in front of me. And she told me the following maisa. She said that one time Rabbi Aaron Cutler was coming to visit their home. And they were cleaning up the house to make it nice and clean for Rabbi Aaron. She walks into the bathroom and she finds her father, the Rosh Yeshiva, on his hands and knees scrubbing the toilet. She said to him, Papa, let me do it. No, he said. For such a big gadol, I do it. He's in his mid-50s, and he was makpid to scrub the toilet and clean it for Rabbi Aaron Cutler. Spoil. Pretty amazing, huh? This is real. This is not fake. She told me the story. She told me the maisa. She told me the story. And I looked at the Rosh Yeshiva. And he smiled and said, nicht punkte ze. Well, not exactly like that. Didn't deny it. I noticed an interesting thing. I once walked in to the house, and he was on the phone wearing his hat and jacket. He tells me, he gets all the things, he says he was talking to Reb Moshe Feinstein. Whenever he would speak to Reb Moshe, his cover for Moshe was unbelievable. When he would talk to Reb Moshe, he would get dressed on the phone. On his hat and jacket before he would sit and talk to Reb Moshe Feinstein. He had that feeling of kavod. There was a maisa that occurred in his life that he would always mention, and you could see on his face how much it meant to him in the course of his lifetime. When he was younger, as I told you, he was an big Ilui. And he went around to all the Gedalim in Europe and he used to speak to them learning. So he went. Once he went into Reb Chaim Eiser, but he didn't know where Reb Chaim Eiser was. He thought he's another one of these Rabbanim that, you know, you talk to them, put him in his back pocket. It didn't mean much to him. So they were learning at that time learning a very difficult sugya. I believe it was the sugya of Gerera, if I'm not mistaken. And Reb Chaim Eiser asked him what he's learning. And Ruderman said, well, I'll tell you, but the Rav's not holding. So Chaim Zeiser gave him a smile. If you know Chaim Zeiser, he was a jovial type of person, very jovial. And he said to Ruderman, try me. Prove me. Try me. So Ruderman started to talk to him and learning. And Ruderman discovered who Reb Chaim Zeiser was. Reb Chaim Zeiser was from, Ruderman would describe him in glowing terms. He was the greatest of all the Iluyim. Every time for the rest of his life that you mention Reb Chaim Zeiser Gazinsky's name in his presence, the wince on his face came. How did I say those words to Reb Chaim Zeiser? How did I say to him, the Rav's not holding? How could I have said that to Reb Chaim Zeiser? Couldn't handle it. He had a certain haracha for, this he picked up, I think, from Slobodka. I mentioned he had a haracha for Kavod HaTorah, Kavod HaAdam. And he was mechabed his own Torah. He knew who he was. He knew his godless Torah. And I remember he said something to me once. Four words that have carried me for the rest of my life in so many different ways. I was walking with him in the hospital, and he must have passed. We passed a water fountain, and he was thirsty. So he asked me to go get a cup. So I told him, you know, you press the button, and the water comes up, and you drink. He looks at me and says to me, "A Xavier Hund, just like a dog." I realized, you know, the kavod, it's not how you drink. You know, behavior, how you drink. To this day, I can't drink from water fountain. Xavier Hund, I can't do it. But it's more than that. It's a statement about the person, about behavior, about how you walk in the street, about how you dress. You know, my wife always makes fun of me. You know, I've been teaching for many years. I never go outside without a jacket. Usually I even wear my hat. But I never will go without a jacket. I dress properly. You have a certain cover for yourself of Torah, of everything. That he was mechabed. His own Torah was mechabed. He was mechabed himself because he understood who he was. He told me once, I was shocked one time. We came to a store and he asked me to go in and get something for him. Okay. And then he tells me, just he's talking. He said, and he said he claimed in his whole life in America, he never went into a store. So I said, well, he said, you know, like a certain kind of kavod. Wasn't a kavod atayra for him to go into a store and go shopping like everybody else. You know, he would, probably was difficult. His wife used to take care of him. I don't know how he did it exactly. But he felt that for who he was and his godless atayra, it wasn't proper for him to go shopping in a store. Like, it wasn't a proper thing to do. In fact, Ad Kedei Kach, as Rosh Yeshiva, I noticed something very interesting. He didn't even make phone calls to people. You'd get a message that the Rosh Yeshiva wants to speak to you, and you called him. He did not, like, that was like, even that he didn't do. There was a certain cover that you called him. You didn't go and phone him. His Ava for Svarim was remarkable. I remember once the Sfarim came to the Ezra's Nashim. We had a whole shipment of Sfarim, a school. Were we holding time-wise? Okay, 10 to. Okay, I don't want to go over your time. Okay. A whole shipment of Sfarim came into the Ezra's Nashim. The Baltimore Hebrew College went out of business. It didn't have anything to do with all the Sfarim. So they sent this, I'm sorry, it wasn't the Baltimore, it was a shul. It was a shul in Baltimore, closed down, reform. And all of their sfarim, they had nothing to do with. They put them in boxes and sent them to the yeshiva. The yeshiva went into the Ezra's Nashim, and he sat down and went through each sefer one at a time. And when there were chashiv sfarim, he held them in his hands like this. I was amazed. Each sefer, he was like petting it. It had such a special covenant, special aracha for all of his sfarim. And more than anything was what he got from the Alta Slobodka, which was the idea of, which was Musar. And he taught us two things. He told me that In Mussar, there were two chidushim of Yisrael Salanter. The first chidush was the method of learning Mussar, which was famous. Everybody knows how they would sit and they would put on their hats and jackets and shuckle back and forth and scream out loud. That was the one part of the Mussar movement. But he said there was another yisoid of the Mussar movement, which was to learn how to make cheshbonos, be mechashbein. Two things. Mechashbein. There's this, but this. I'll give you an example. He told the following story. He said there was a Rav, I wouldn't have to mention his name, but there was a Rav in Elizabeth, New Jersey, who, according to him, the Rashiva said he was staying by this Rav for Shabbos once. The Rav came over to him and took him outside. He says, I have to speak to you. He says, on Shabbos, we're going to sing Zmiris at the table. And my daughters are also going to sing Zmiris. I don't want you to run out of the house. So why are you telling me this? He says, because there was another Rosh Hashiva that was here a couple of weeks ago. And my daughter started to sing, and he ran out of the house. So the Shiva said that Musar told him, you're right, he's Nisha Issa Kalisha, but there's a cheshbon also in embarrassing the girls. Now, he's told the story, that's how he used to tell the story. I have to tell you that a lot of people think that the tetzah of that story, the way it went around the tzibur was, he let the listen to the girls sing. That is not true. Because I'll tell you how I know it's not true. Because I was in Camp Enos with my wife. We had a job in Camp Enos. We used to spend time with the Shiva in Camp Aguda, but we slept in Camp Enos. On Friday night, when it came time to make Kiddush, the girls were always in the other side of the wall, singing and, you know, doing whatever they do when girls do on Shabbos. And I didn't know how to make Kiddush. Because by the time I went to make Kiddush, they were already singing away. There was a problem of Kalisha, Bishas Kiddush. I didn't know how to do it. So I came to speak to him, and I asked him the Shaila, what should I do? So he laughed. I remember how he said it to me, very cute. The first thing he said to me was, if you knew as many Eterim as I know, you'd be an Epicurus. Then he quoted Reb Zril Hildesheimer. Who wouldn't know a psak for Reb Zril Hildesheimer from Germany? He said, Reb Zril holds, if they're women singing together, it's a trei kol lamishtame. There's a rule in Chazal, two voices aren't heard. If two girls are singing together, it's no problem with Kalisha. He said, it's not a richtige time. You can't be semich and it's not right. And then he told me this story. And he told me, when he told me the story, he said he sat at the table like this. Chazal say, what is this for? This is to stop up the ears, that you shouldn't hear Lashon Hara. So he took his earlobes and folded them up and he sat at the table. Now, why this was less embarrassing than running out, I'm not sure. But he sat at the table, he told me like this. He said, after he told me the story, it was a very cute story, I loved it. He said to me, it won't help you. Because you can do only one ear. The other ear is holding the cup. So he said, there's no way you're going to be able to get away with that. So he said, that won't work. So in the end, he had no heter for me. He said, you just have to wait until they're eating. And then you can make kiddush. He didn't really have a heter for me. But that was the story he said. The reason why I'm telling you this is because this idea of making cheshbonos, of learning how to make a cheshbon, was something that pervaded his chinuch and something that pervaded his chinuch to us. In fact, I remember there was once a tkufa when the yeshiva decided to make a kill Shabbos. A Shabbos with a kill would all be together. And there was a big fight in the kill as to whether the yungalite should sit mixed, husbands and wives together, kill yungalite, or they should sit separate. Now, it went around, one of the yungalite thought it was proper that the husbands and wives, they're married, everybody will sit around the table with their wives together. I was a little yeshivish, I admit, and I didn't think it was the right thing to do. I didn't think it was tenua. When you have, if it's just, you know, two, when it's a whole kilo, we're all b'nei Torah, at a certain point, you know, when it's the man on one side, the woman on the other side, that. So I made a little bit of a tumble. We came into the reshiva with me and this other person. And we asked her if she was okay. It was interesting. He said to us, yeah, he says you can sit mixed. He said, we can sit mixed. I said, wait a minute, can you sit mixed? Yeah, he says, Ichabalein, I made chasnas when we had mixed eating. He says, Rabbi Aaron Kotler made chasnas and had mixed eating. I'm incredulous. I couldn't believe what he was saying. So I started pushing him. We started going back and forth. I explained to him, I said, you mean to say that you sat on one side of the table and the women sat on the other side of the table like that? He said, no. So it was a big table. And the men were sitting over here on one side of the table, and the women were sitting on the other side of the table, and that's what he called mixed seating, that the men and women were at one table at different sides. So when I said that, I said, like, we were in shock. That's what he meant. Oh. So he was really saying he was really opposed to the mixed seating. But the next time I saw him, he used to, every time once in a while, he used to give me kisses. He used to say the Alt used to give kisses. He would give a kiss. The next time I saw him, I didn't get my kiss. And I said to him, Shiva, should we get the kiss? Like this with his hand, you're not getting a kiss. And I understood. He was giving me a nazifa. Because he said, what he was saying was, you were right about making this whole tumult with its tznius. But the way it was done, you didn't do it right. You made, there was bad feelings, and that was the cheshbon of a Baal Musar, knowing how properly. And I got my chinuch. After he saw, I got the message, and the kisses came back. Mm-hmm. I think we're hitting 30 minutes. I think we're going over time, huh? I don't want to go over time. I don't want to go too long. Four more minutes? All right. Okay. Truth of the matter is, I can really go on and on. I have spoken about the Reshiva for a 2 hours at length. His legacy is so incredible and so amazing, and there's just so many stories that we can tell. It was not only the Maislich that happened with him. He was a Pesach to history that we didn't know about. He told us stories about Gedolim in Europe he told me once about the Chafetz Chaim, three things already. He described once on Tisha B'Av, he said as he walked out, he was in Radin for one Zman. He said as he walked out of the shul, he saw the Chafetz Chaim sitting at his chair saying Kinis. When he came back the next morning, the Chafetz Chaim was sitting in exactly the same place he was sitting the night before, and there was nicker, you could see it, a pool of tears at his feet. Can't hear that anyplace else. This was someone who had to see that and could tell us those kind of stories. He told a story with his Rebbe, the Alt of Slobodka. He was probably, I think it's safe to say, the closest Talmud of all to the Alt of Slobodka. And the reason for that was because the Alt of Slobodka actually brought Rav Ruderman to live in his home. He did this for a reason. Because the Alter felt, he saw that the Reshivas, they had what they called stancias in Europe. Everybody had played, it wasn't like today where you had, in the first dorm in Klal Yisrael was Yeshivas Chachmi Lublin. Before that, they didn't have dorms in yeshivas. People in the town rented their places to the Bachram. Bachram lived in Balabatim's places in town, and there was a basement where people learned. But Ruderman shared his room with a person that later became the head of the conservative movement in the United States. And the Alter saw that this was somebody he didn't want Rav Ruderman to be with. So he took the Rosh Yeshiva away from that stancia and put him in his backyard, put him in his house, and kept an eye on him. He told an amazing story. He said, one night, the Alter of Slobodka was about, he made Kiddush, and he got up to wash. He washed his hands, and then the Rebbetzin just casually whispered into his ear, in Yiddish, Yosef Yoizel is Nifta Gevar Neint. Yosef Yoizel, that was the Alter of Navardik. She whispered, the Alter of Navardik was Nifta today. So the Alter froze. He didn't move, like froze, paralyzed. They didn't know what to do. Should we call a doctor? What should we do? He said, the way he said it was, a half an hour he stood frozen. Then after a half an hour, after they wondered, they didn't know what to do, he just continued what he was doing. He walked back to the table, made Kiddush, like nothing happened. Came Motzei Shabbos. As soon as Shabbos was over, the Alter raced into his room, and he cried for about 2-3 hours after that. He obviously was controlling himself, keeping himself from crying. That was a powerful story. By the way, I have to share with you, I'm going to close with a couple of, he was very good at pithy sayings. His lines were powerful. And a lot of them are important and quote, very quotable. I once was said to him, I spoke about the fact that he was a great Ilui. I said to him, it's not a covet to be an Ilui. I said, why not? He said, you know what Ilui stands for? Ein Lamed Vov Yud, Einaim Lahem Velo Yiru. That's an Ilui. Someone is, you know, it's not a covet. He once commented to me after a bris, and all the Balabatim ran out, and all the Yungalite, you know, didn't have to run off for work, they're staying. He says to me, that's what it means. He says, Ein Lecha Ben Chorin Elamisha Isik Batera. That's what it means. And this was my favorite. When the Rebbetzin was ill, and she was in the hospital, and he was on his way to the hospital to visit her, he sent me into the house to get makeup. He didn't even know what makeup between the eyebrow pencil and the lipstick. Men, we don't know anything about this stuff. He didn't even know what she wanted exactly. Just bring, he told me to go in and bring it, but he didn't know exactly what she wanted. I bring out whatever I could find. I bring it to him. He's holding it in his hands. And he looks at me and he says to me the following. He says to me, Chav Galant, I'll say it in Yiddish. Chav Galant ganz Bavli and Yerushalmi. I learned the whole Bavli and the whole Yerushalmi. I learned the whole Sifra and the Sifri and the Mechilta. I learned it all. I learned the Tosefta. I learned Mechilta the Rashbi. I learned everything. I learned all the Rishonim on all the Masechtas. I learned all the Achronim on all the Masechtas. I learned Bezel Losh in hundreds of thousands of tshuvas, I know. But after everything, Nochals, after everything, so the Ein Zach Vash Vashtechnet, there's still one thing I don't understand. A Froy, a woman. I always said later, my wife and my mother-in-law love the line. I said, this was the Lithuanian version of men are from Mars, women are from Venus. After everything, he couldn't understand. He was such a remarkable, powerful figure. And they're gone. This is just one person I told you about. I gave you just some stories. I say I can go on for another hour and a half easily. What is it? Where's the Iluyas? What's happened? Where is it gone? I can't even blame it on the internet. Because there wasn't any internet in my day. We weren't Gedolim like this either. We couldn't meet them. I don't know. You know, we think on the one hand that all of the freedom and all of that what we can do, but the air, in the end of the day, the purity is gone. All we can do is be inspired by these stories. And those of us who were Zeche and were meritous to see these people, we have, I think, an achrayus to sort of say over this stuff and let other daras to know and be inspired that there's somebody they can reach up to. And I just want to finish with one last story. I heard the story recently. The story was said over by, there was a man by the name of Lefkowitz, who was one of the Rishivas first Talmidim in Ner Yisrael in 1933. And this Lefkowitz saw in yeshiva that everybody was going and they were studying and getting, they're going for degrees and they're going to become lawyers and doctors and people leaving yeshiva. No, Bochram didn't want to be in yeshiva. We're not talking about after yeshiva to get married. We're talking about as Bochram. It was not in vogue once upon a time in America for people to go to yeshiva. There were only two yeshivas. Ner Yisrael was one of the three yeshivas. There were very few yeshivas in America. Torah was almost non-existent. And he wanted to go off and get out of yeshiva. So Ruderman told him, you're going to see. There's going to be more Torah in America than there is in Europe, than there was in Europe. That's prophetic. And he was right. There are probably, I have to tell you, anybody have any idea how many Bochram learned in Lita before the war? Probably didn't even know. I think if you count everybody, every single one, maybe you'll get to 4,000. I think the Lakewood Yeshiva has more than 4,000 people today already. The Mir Yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael certainly does. Well over that. So the Torah that everybody thought was going to be finished flourished, and that's his legacy, and that's the legacy of Ner Yisrael. That's it, guys. All right. Oh, yeah.